Support for Central Florida Public Media comes from Daytona Beach International Airport, offering new nonstop service to New York City and Boston, Massachusetts, beginning December 4th. Daytona Beach International Airport features convenient access to the terminal, easy and close parking, and more. Details at flydab.com.
Ah, but I was so much older then. I'm younger than that now.
Coming up today on Growing Bolder, Flo Milar, the greatest over 90-year-old female athlete on the planet. The guy who had no idea he could play the piano, let alone compose music, who has just released his first album at age 73. The former NPR correspondent turned New York Times bestselling author, who is shattering myths about aging, and Field Trip, will visit the Joe Dome to check up on Jumpin' Joe Johnston, still winning world pole vaulting championships at 80 years old. Welcome into Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. And as you folks hopefully know by now, Growing Bolder is the official media partner of the National Senior Games. And we are that because we like to share the inspiring stories of older adults who are staying active, trying new things, and bouncing back from adversity. And I got to tell you, we're not trying to turn anyone into a senior athlete, but we are trying to turn everyone into a believer that more is possible as we age, especially because our ageist culture wants us to believe that we're going to decline rapidly no matter what we do, and that it's too late to make any major changes in what we do, any major changes in how we live, how we act, and what we think. In 2007, on this very program, we interviewed a great-grandmother who took up track and field at the age of 60, including starting pole vaulting at the age of 65. That interview was 18 years ago. She's now 91, and the question is, how is she doing? Is she still competing in track and field? Well, here's the answer, folks. At the recent Masters Indoor World Championships in Gainesville, Florida, she won 8 gold medals. She set 4 new world age group records in the 60-meter hurdles, the triple jump, the pole vault, and the pentathlon. So counting, and I could be wrong, but I think she's now set about 39 world records in track and field and is considered by most, and certainly by this program, to be the best all-around over 90 female athlete who has ever lived. So let's find out more as we chat once again with the great Flo Milar. Flo, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
First of all, congratulations. You know, the World Masters Championship is a big meet, and you had a good meet. As I mentioned, 8 golds, 4 world records. What were you most pleased with? Were you surprised with how you performed?
Now I've got 5 world records. I got to mention that.
Okay.
I don't think I was surprised because I was training very, very hard, and I knew that I wanted to do my best, and the good Lord helped me, and that's what I did.
And you know, some later in life athletes, if you will, you know, seem to come out of nowhere, but that's not really the case for you. I mean, you did come out of nowhere for track and field, but you came out of tennis. You were a competitive senior games tennis player. How did that lead to track and field for you?
I was competing with my husband in mixed doubles. In halftime, Barbara Jordan, my former coach and best friend and teacher, she came over and she said, Flo, we're really desperate for track people, and I would like you to come and try the long jump. And I'm sort of rather stunned because I says, here I am 60 years old, and she's asking me to come and do the long jump. So I was really, really shocked. And she says, well, you come and try the long jump when you're done with your tennis. And that's what I did. And almost 31 years ago, I'm still going.
It all started with a long jump. I mean, was that like a kismet moment? Did you like it immediately? Were you intrigued by the difficulty? Why did you like it so much?
I guess I always liked learning new things, and I liked challenges. And I knew Barbara was a fantastic athlete, and I couldn't have had a better coach. And so we started training together, and we started competing against each other, but we never did argue or anything. We were the best of friends.
You know, so many older athletes, and there's really nothing wrong with it, are one-trick ponies. They find an event that they like, and they stick with that. You certainly liked long jump, but you didn't just stick with that. I mean, is there an event in Masters Track and Field that you don't compete in? How many events do you compete in?
Well, if you count the pentathlon, it's five events in that. So if you count that and then you do another eight, sometimes I would have like 13 events at one meet. So that was a lot. Now I'm down to around eight events, but that still keeps me pretty busy.
And why did you decide to do that? I mean, folks, we're talking about long jump, high jump, hurdles, the sprints, the middle distances. She throws the hammer throw. I'm sure she throws the shot put, steeplechase. I mean, you name it, she does it all. Why did you decide to keep trying to learn new events?
No, you're putting me on the spot. I like I said, I've always liked challenges, and I would keep watching some of these athletes do all these various events. And I just kept telling myself, I can do those. And that's why I attempted to do it. And I was able to accomplish what I wanted.
And folks, again, taking this outside of the context of track and field, Flo Milar is the best there ever was in multiple age groups because she said yes. That doesn't mean if you say yes to things, you're going to be the best that there ever was. But all of these experiences that she's had, all of the inspiration that she provides is simply because she decided to say yes. And Flo, obviously, you've got an incredible amount of athletic ability. As a young girl, participated in basketball, I know. But beyond that, beyond your athletic ability, why are you the best? What is responsible for your success? Is it physical? Is it mental? Is it attitude? What is it?
I think it's physical, yes. But it's also the good Lord has really, really blessed me with good health and a talent. I must say that without the good Lord, I would never have done everything that I've done now.
And I think, you know, we can be blessed with good health, but aging what it is, you know, bad things can happen to good people. How much has the regime that you have bought into? I mean, how often do you train? 3, 4, 5, 6 days a week?
6 days a week I train. Yeah.
How much is that responsible for your overall health and well-being? What would Flo Milar be like today if she didn't play tennis and she didn't then begin to participate in track and field?
Well, at age 90, if you don't keep going, it goes down pretty fast. And so on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I do track, and I have to change whatever I do because I do so many events. And then on Tuesdays and Thursdays, you have to keep your body in shape. I do weights for about 25, 30 minutes before I play tennis for an hour and a half, social tennis. It's not competitive, it's social. And then on Saturday, I run, jog 3 miles on the bike path, which is near our house. So Sunday is the day I take off.
And what about diet and nutrition? Are you obsessed with that? What kind of stuff do you put in your body?
I have been taking a nutritional shake every morning now for at least 30 years. I have a nutritional shake that I take. Otherwise, I eat pretty well, a regular diet for the lunch and dinner.
And you now are inspiring people of all ages. And I know, Flo, that's got to be one of the things that keeps you going, other than your competitive nature, because it's obviously you still like to compete, you love to win. But how much does it mean to you to know that you're not just inspiring other older adults, you're not just inspiring other 60-year-olds who have never thought about doing something different, but you're now inspiring 8 and 10 and 12 and 14-year-old girls, really girls and boys, to know that we don't have to age the way our culture has led us to believe. How important is it to you to be that source of inspiration?
Let me tell you, at the Worlds, it was a fantastic feeling being there. I had more than 25 or so people come, ladies and gentlemen, come up to me and say, "You are such an inspiration. Could I have a picture taken with you?" And of course, I would say yes. So I have several. I told them that if you're going to take a picture with me, please give me your email and picture, because I want to make an album of all these people that have asked me to be part of me when I get back home.
That's nice. So you've become a role model to many, but you grew up in a world where there really weren't role models like you. Certainly no 90-year-olds that were setting world records in pole vault. But who has inspired you? Who have been your role models? Who are people that you've looked up to over the years?
Well, that's a very stiff question, because I was brought up on a dairy farm and doing very, very heavy duty chores. And I went to St. Mary's Academy, which is not quite a private school, but I was always active. I mean, I always wanted to do everything. I got active in basketball. I got active in ballroom dancing. I got active in cheerleading. I got active in the band. And then as soon as I finished school, I started competitive water skiing. So I guess it's in my blood. I love to compete. And I also did water ski shows, doing the pyramids. And I must tell you, I guess it was just in my blood.
And you were fortunate. You mentioned St. Mary's, your high school, where you played basketball. And this is back in the time when it was rare. Almost no high schools had basketball teams or teams for sports. You were before Title IX, which, as we all know, kind of changed everything and made sports accessible to girls.
Right.
Were you frustrated growing up as a young girl, Flo, wanting to participate in more sports and not being allowed to?
No, really. Like I said, at my school, it was also a boarding school, and we were fortunate to have a lot of ladies from South America. And that's why we had such a fantastic basketball team. So that was my challenge again. But I laugh about it, but I can remember somebody saying that I was a dirty guard.
if you still play basketball, would you be a dirty guard?
Oh, sure. Why not?
I was going to say that's a nice way of asking, do you still have the same competitive drive? But it seems apparent you do.
Oh, yes. I love challenges. Yes.
And do you wish there were more 90-year-olds to compete against? Because you're opening up age groups. You're doing things that nobody has done in the past. And I know you're, in many cases, running against the clock. You're running against history. You're running against yourself. I sense you would like to have a complete final of 8 women in there all going after one another.
Well, that would be so much more fun. Like, I had just one other lady, Crystal Donnelly from Colorado, and we've been competing with each other for over 30 years. And it is more challenging when there are more athletes competing with you. I really miss not having more athletes in my age group.
So you compete in the World Masters Championship. You compete in USATF, USA Track and Field National Championships. You compete in the National Senior Games. Talk a little bit, if you will, Flo, about what you get out of that, other than the recognition and the gold medals and the world records. Talk about the socialization. Talk about the intergenerational connection. How important is all of that?
Oh, the Senior Games. I've been on the board here in Vermont now, I think, for almost 25 years. And I think I've motivated several people, several senior citizens, to get active. And I've spoken to several different organizations to get active, because In Vermont, there are several towns who have senior centers. And I have been a guest speaker at a lot of these senior centers. And so I really, really enjoy motivating the seniors to get active and not sit on the couch.
How's your husband doing these days? Because I know you've been married to Jean for 65 years now.
Be 65 next December, yeah. We just celebrated our 64th. He has AFib, heart condition. And a week or so ago, he was not feeling well. But now he has a new pacemaker, and it's looking a little bit better. But I really miss him not being able to travel with me.
And what does he think of your athletic success? I read somewhere, Flo, that he actually leaves you little secret notes sometimes when you go to compete. What does that mean to you, and what do some of those notes say?
He'll say, go for it, have fun, and bring some more medals. Yeah, he's really, really proud of me, and he wish he could come with me, but that's not in the cards right now.
You know, it seems to me from all of the Masters athletes that we've talked to, you know, maybe the number one key of all is avoiding injury. And then the number two key is being able to bounce back if and when you do get injuries. It doesn't seem like you've had too many, if any, major injuries. But how do you avoid injuries, and how hard is it to come back as a 90-year-old now?
Before I go to the track in the morning, I do stretch at home for, let's say, 15, 20 minutes. Because as you get older, you really, really have to take care of your body. You have to do a lot more stretching to keep in shape. And then when I get to the track, I do another 15 minutes of warm-ups. Because like you say, at 90, you really have to be careful and stretch all those body parts.
So what advice would you give to other older adults who are listening to this, and they have no interest in pole vaulting or running the hurdles or the pentathlon, but what advice would you give them, you know, just about leaning into life, about saying yes? What's the takeaway here, Flo?
I know I see a lot of athletes sometimes. They're sitting down watching us compete, and I wonder why they are not participating. And a lot of times it was because the events were too difficult. So in Vermont this year, we're having a mile walk. And this way, anyone can participate in the senior games. And I'm trying very hard. In fact, last year, I was able to talk to several seniors to come and do the mile walk. I said, you can do it at your own pace, and you will really enjoy it. And I was surprised. I had several ladies who came and enjoyed it very much.
Good for you. And I don't know if you ever imagined what life might be like at 90. And, you know, let's be honest, I'm sure it's got its challenges. Every age, every life stage has its challenges. But there are people out there who say, you know, life isn't worth living beyond 75 or 80 or 85 or 90. What do you say to that? Are you still enjoying your life? Do you still look forward to the future?
Oh, gosh, I sure am. I enjoy it very much. It's hard work. I do train a lot, but it's very, very rewarding. And I would be lost if I didn't have all the different sports, the different events that I do, because I really enjoy every one of them. And if I feel that there's one event that I think I shouldn't be doing, I will cross it off my list. And as I get older, I may have to do that.
How long will you keep going?
Forever. I'll keep going forever as long as the good Lord gives me my health and my talent.
Go get 'em, Flo. Well, unfortunately, Flo is the exception when it comes to being active as we age. In fact, 25% of all Americans don't get any exercise at all. And as we get older and become less active, we become less fit. And when we become less fit, we become far more susceptible to injury, to chronic illness and disease. So it's really no coincidence that the number of frail older adults here in the U.S. is now projected to double by 2040. So take a lesson from Flo Milar, folks. Get off the couch and get moving. All right, when we return, he discovered a hidden talent later in life, and now he's sharing it with the world. This is Growing Bolder.
Support for Growing Bolder provided by...
Rides with Uber help give older adults the freedom they need and deserve. Plus, many Medicare Advantage Flex cards help cover the cost of Uber rides to appointments and important deliveries with Uber Eats, like groceries and OTC medication. Learn more at uberhealth.com/card or call 1-866-827-4584. Welcome back to Growing Bolder. I'm Mark Middleton. If you think it's too late to discover a hidden talent, you need to meet Steve Goldberg. He built a successful career helping individuals and businesses navigate life's many transitions. In his 50s, he discovered a hidden talent when he decided for the very first time to see if he could learn to play the piano. And he didn't just play. He began to compose and then to record. And finally, at the age of 73, he released his first album, a testament to what he's preached for years. Getting out of your comfort zone is a good thing, and it's never too late to discover a new passion. Steve Goldberg joins us now from his home in British Columbia, Canada. Steve, how you doing?
I'm doing great, and boy, I'd like to meet that guy one time.
Yo, I'm thrilled to meet him myself. Sounds like a very interesting fellow. Let's talk about where you are, first of all, because I understand you're a New York transplant who lives on a nature sanctuary island in British Columbia. How the heck did you end up there?
Well, I wound up finishing grad school in Boston, and I applied for a couple of jobs. And I love the concept of some doors closing and others opening. So the jobs didn't work out. It was a couple of high-end leadership jobs, and I decided to put a van together. I was 26 years old at the time, and I went ahead and traveled up and down Canada and the U.S. for the next 9 months in the camper van. I landed in Vancouver, and there was an opening for a job in one of the colleges in Vancouver, and started my career working there and teaching. And soon after, I realized that this is not what I really wanted to do for the rest of my life. And so the rest of my life, I spent doing leadership development, executive coaching, and also worked with individuals, as you mentioned, Mark, helping them navigate transitions. I just find that that's a real sweet spot for me, and never realized that I'd be having a special one later on when I decided to finish up my career and start my next chapters of, I don't call it retirement, but rewirement, and started rewiring myself and just found some interesting places that I never knew existed in me. I never knew that I had much creative abilities. And so to be able to stumble on this music piece was the most stunned by where this has led me.
So is stumble the right word? How did you come to it? I mean, is it true that you never played the piano before? Did you not have an interest in playing it as a child? I mean, what led you?
I always did. We came from a working class family, and there wasn't that kind of opportunity to do something like that. And it was always in the back of my head that I would love to play an instrument, like many of us have that as a goal. And I just kept with it. I'm one of the people who was very pleased to have the solitude and quiet time during COVID. And that's really where my music really popped. where I was alone and isolated a lot. And living in nature just brought out music started coming through me. That's the best way I can describe it.
I mean, you said that you were persistent, Steve, when you took it up. I mean, were you a quick learner? Did it come easily? And if not, why did you not give up? Because a lot of people, when they fail initially at something, think, well, it's not meant for me.
Absolutely. A great question, Mark. You know, I'm a real fan of mindsets and growth mindset for sure. And I've had the good fortune of learning quickly things that I'm passionate about and putting in the effort to learn. And what I find that more interesting in this time of life, when it's not competitive, you're not looking to make your living from it, it's a very relaxed, enjoyable pace. And it became a meditative process for me. The interesting thing is I don't read music, so I had to create my own notation system. And when I recorded the Sweet Dreams album, which its subtitle is Encouraging Calm, Restful Sleep and Dreaming, I played it right through. It's a 25-minute piece in eight different sections. And I had to memorize it because I don't read music. So there was all sorts of mental activities and challenges that I really embraced and loved doing.
So let's recap the timeline, if we will, for everybody here. We're talking with a 73-year-old man, correct? You're 73 now?
Yeah, closer to 74 now, yeah.
Closer to 74, took up the piano for the first time ever in his 50s and, you know, learned to play, never read music. But during the COVID pandemic, you know, he's hanging out on this nature sanctuary island in British Columbia, you know, doing what you do, and began to compose. And as you began to compose, and I have to tell you, Stephen, I've listened to your album. It's great. Huh. And it does really represent and reflect what you just said, that it was composed during a time of sanctuary, during a time of isolation, during a time of peace and calm, yeah, and solitude. I mean, it's very much relaxing, meditative kind of music. But, you know, so as you're hanging out and the music starts to come to you and you don't write music, I mean, how does that happen? How long did it take you to write this?
You know, some of it came through quickly. It's interesting. I had a feeling I'd be asked this question, and I realized that I wanted a better answer than I don't know. And one of the things that I do a lot of meditation, and I was aware that when I start playing on the piano and looking at, I learned chord patterns, I learned all about key signatures and key signatures that evoke particular emotions, and I played around. And what would happen is I would start getting goosebumps when I stumbled on something that was worthy of continuing to explore. And I needed to understand, what are goosebumps? What's going on here? And I realized that they're a signal to me to pay attention. And they're a signal about finding resonance and connection to a melody or a chording structure that was speaking to me. And much to my surprise, it was speaking to others. And that was probably the most surprising part of this, is hanging out at my piano and doing what I was doing and then realizing that others might have interest in this. But that goosebump thing really had me spend a bunch of time kind of thinking and reflecting on paying attention, slowing down, and listening to our bodies.
Let's talk a little bit about creativity, because, you know, one of my pet peeves in terms of trying to inspire older adults to do stuff is that, you know, we get so set in our ways and we, you know, we live in this ageist culture that doesn't encourage us to believe that we can do more. I was fascinated, Steve, when I read a long-term study that was actually published in the Journal of Aging and Health. It examined a variety of personality traits and it concluded that only creativity of all of these personality traits has significant life-extending benefits, that creativity actually lowers our blood pressure, it reduces anxiety, it relieves depression and stress, it boosts our immune system, it actually lowers our risk of Alzheimer's, and that in this study, creative people had a 12% decrease in mortality over an 18-year period. And you know, there's two things that come to mind. The question is why? And to me, the answer is that creative people are problem solvers. Creative people are able to, you know, take what is and build what might be. Creative people don't give up. And then the second part of that, which is something I love to talk about, is the fact that we are all creative. It's in our DNA. Human beings by nature are creative. It's why cavemen made paintings on the walls, you know, thousands of years ago. And creativity doesn't mean that you have to compose an album like Steve Goldberg did. Creativity is figuring out what the heck you're going to eat for dinner. Creativity is looking in your closet and trying to figure out what you're going to wear that day. Creativity is having a conversation with somebody and going back and forth. So, you know, folks, the point of all this is don't say you're not creative because you are. That's just a lame excuse. You know, what have you learned about yourself, Steve, after decades of trying to inspire others to get out of their comfort zone? What has this taught you about your capabilities?
Well, I can't do stick drawing, okay? I failed art class in elementary school. Again, it's about mindset, right? So you get these data points that tell you you're not good at this, so don't bother. What amazes me is with all the work that I've done with myself and the work that I've done with others, I never realized this talent that was sitting dormant inside me. And it really brings up the thought for me of how do we help others release what's sitting inside them? I recently wrote an article about my experience and challenging us to look at some of this. And it's called The Late Bloomer's Advantage and How Age Can Enrich Personal and Creative Expression. So it goes right to the core of what you're saying.
Steve, give us a takeaway, if you will, and it doesn't just have to be about creativity, but life in general. You know, what can we learn from you? What's the key to a happy, healthy, joyful aging?
You know, I think maintaining our curiosity, and I think that's probably what leads to the creativity. You know, I'm a strong believer of dialing up our imaginations, our curiosity, and our optimism about what's possible in life. And I think all too often we kind of, the dial is kind of on high as you start to age and your focus is on what's not working and what you don't have. And my belief is it's, you know, focus on what you do have and what you can do and continue doing and what you want to continue doing.
He is, Steve Goldberg, an example for all of us that it's never too late to develop new skills and to find new passions. His debut album is called Sweet Dreams, Piano for Encouraging Calm, Restful Sleep, and Dreaming. And trust me, it will do all of that. You can find out more on his website, sweetdreamslullaby.com. All right, up next, what are you doing to take advantage of an entirely new life stage that has never before existed? We're going to chat with a former NPR correspondent turned New York Times bestselling author who is now busting some long-held myths with her book, The Science, Art, and Opportunity of Midlife.
Sign up for the Growing Boulder Insider newsletter, delivered to your inbox every week. Be the first to see our latest interviews, stories, and tips for making each day count. Sign up today at growingboulder.com. Miss an episode of Growing Boulder Radio? Subscribe to our podcast and get it on your mobile device. Details at growingboulder.com/podcasts.
In a soldier's
Mark Middleton and Bill Schaefer here as we continue Growing Bolder, the show that empowers you to not only look past the stereotypes of age, but to smash them at every opportunity and realize the true potential that is available in all of our lives as we continue moving through them.
You should recognize the voice of our next guest. After all, she spent more than 20 years as a correspondent at NPR, but she left to pursue other challenges, and she became the author of the New York Times bestseller, Fingerprints of God. And her latest endeavor is a little more terrestrial, but perhaps just as fascinating, because it's called Life Reimagined: The Science, Art, and Opportunity of Midlife. And she is Barbara Bradley Haggerty. How are you, Barbara?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Great topic, great idea for a book. And I guess if we were playing a word association game, you say midlife, we say crisis, but then you say that is not necessarily true.
Yes, I would say myth. That's what I would say. It turns out that only about 10% of people have this existential angst that, you know, you're afraid you're going to die before you acquire your dreams, reach your dreams, and all of that. That only about 10% of people have that kind of midlife crisis. I have to say, though, that a lot of people across cultures, across countries, have a dip in happiness in midlife in their 40s and early 50s. But if you just hang on, it'll get better. It'll get better. That's what the surveys show. And so while we do expect a dip in midlife, people generally get happier.
That is life, isn't it? And you know, one of the things that bugs us a little bit here at Growing Bolder is that people automatically connect negative feelings to age. And the problem with midlife may, in fact, have very little to do with age, but just the fact that we've had decades of differing experiences. I mean, we've dealt with wins and losses, marriage, divorce, optimism, and reality. And you say that midlife is actually pretty much a reality adjustment for us.
It is. It is. I think what happens, this is what psychologists believe happen. You know, when we're in our 20s and 30s, we think that we're going to be the CEO of the company, or I'm going to win a Pulitzer Prize or whatever. And what begins to happen in our 40s is we realize, you know, I may not be CEO. I may not win that Pulitzer, although I'm still hoping that I will. But you begin to adjust your expectations and say, you know, even if I'm not CEO, I have a lot of great stuff in my life. I have a great spouse, or I have great kids, and I've got my health, and I've got friends, and I've got my church or political cause I'm interested in. And we begin to kind of revise our expectations. And that's when you see people beginning to get happier and appreciate those things that they actually have. And in fact, as people get older, they tend to focus on two things. They begin to forget about having a larger house or more cars or that kind of thing. They begin to focus on people and causes that are close to their hearts. That's what begins to happen, and those things make them happy.
You know, the other part too, Barbara, midlife has kind of been defined as a time where we sort of start to hunker down to get ready for the pain and suffering that no doubt lies ahead for us in life. And what you tell us is, if that's what you think, that very well may be what your midlife is about, but it doesn't have to be.
That's right. I mean, I just think the power of thinking is it's amazing. It's something my mother told me when I was little, you know, your thinking is your experience. And I have found that, in fact, science suggests that's true, that the way we look at the world, I'm not saying you have to be Pollyanna, but how do you approach that bad diagnosis, or how do you approach that problem at work? Is it with a sense of, you know, dread and, oh my goodness, this is going to turn out terribly? Or is it a sense of, you know, let me rely on my friends to help me get through, my family to get through this diagnosis. Let me work through this problem at work. This is going to be, it's not always okay, because sometimes those diagnoses are bad, but even if the diagnosis is bad, how you approach it, whether you seek help from other people, whether you're appreciative and grateful, that will actually reflect on how you experience that whole episode of your life.
Yeah, great point. To a large degree, we determine our reality. We're speaking, folks, with Barbara Bradley Haggerty, a longtime correspondent at NPR, a best-selling author. Her latest book is called Life Reimagined. And Barbara, as we talk about midlife, I think we also almost have to redefine it these days, don't we? As we reimagine what our midlife could be, it's going to be a lot longer than it's been in the past, isn't it?
Right. Right. Like in 1900, people only lived into their 40s. They didn't really have midlife. It's as if we have a whole third life, extra bonus years, you know, extra 20 or 30 bonus years. And so it really should affect how we think about our lives. For example, are you thinking, well, I'm just going to retire at 65 and play golf? That is actually not a recipe for a good life. That's a recipe for going downhill steeply after 65. Instead, what people should think is, gee, you know, I'm 55 years old now. What do I want to do that will leave a legacy? What do I feel is important to do? Is there something that I can use my talents, strengths, passions to really further the cause of? Whether it's a, you know, a nonprofit that you really care about, or if it's just altering the way you approach your work at your company. How can I invest forward and feel that every day is worthwhile, that I'm leaping out of bed in the morning because I'm excited about what I'm doing? You know, you don't want to just hold on till you're 65 and then hope that golf is around your corner, around the corner. You actually want to invest in every year and every chapter because we may live to be 90.
You know, a lot of authors are pretty good observers, Barbara, but you've actually done a lot of this yourself. I mean, you started to look for little adventures, entering a competitive bike race or traveling around with your husband in an RV. How important is it to shake up that old routine no matter what it is?
Oh, my gosh, it's so important. It's important in every aspect of your life. The research on marriage shows that novelty is very important for a midlife marriage because, you know, we get into a rut and you begin to disengage. You can often begin to disengage from your partner, and that is not a good sign. It's a recipe for divorce down the road, actually. But even things like finding a hobby, I'll tell you, I found that the happiest people were those that had a little, what I call a little passion, a little pursuit that had nothing to do with their work responsibilities or their family responsibilities, but it was something just their own, where they could improve every day or every week. You know, I talked to someone who took up the flute after having let that seal lie fallow for about 30 years. I talked to someone who decided to learn Spanish, and now she travels all through South America every year. For me, I decided, after I got arthritis in my right knee and could no longer run, I decided I was going to start cycling. And then I got challenged to try to compete for the Senior Games, the National Senior Games, which is a competition for people 50 and older. I'll tell you, it added punctuation to my life. It added, you know, it gave me a reason to get up in the morning. I mean, I had other reasons too, but I had a little goal. You know, can I do 50 miles today? Can I do those intervals faster? And can I actually qualify and compete? And it really, really added verve and excitement to my life. And that, I think, it's really important to do, to shake things up.
Folks, you should read the book because, after all, it's been called the Bible of midlife. Barbara, we've got 20 seconds to go. You're a media pro. Give us a takeaway. What is the main message you want people to know?
Well, I think the main message is autopilot is death, and let me say that positively. Engage with verve. Anything that you really care about, engage, whether it's your marriage, your career, your kids, your hobbies, a cause, engage, invest in it, because that will make you happy and purposeful.
The book is called Life Reimagined, and it can totally change yours. Our thanks to the author, Barbara Bradley Haggerty.
Up next, we're taking a ride with the world's greatest pole vaulter over the age of 80. This is Growing Bolder.
Stay connected to Growing Bolder for daily doses of hope, inspiration, and possibility. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for our latest stories and motivational pictures.
Welcome back to Growing Bolder. We recently stopped by the Joe Dome, the indoor pole vaulting room that 80-year-old Joe Johnston and his wife Janet added onto their home. And let's just say up front that Joe is not your typical 80-year-old. He's the world age group champion in pole vaulting and hurdles. And when we arrived, he was diving out of the rafters into a pit 20 feet below and doing handstand push-ups before hurdling and pole vaulting. He was so busy that he didn't have time to make a healthy lunch, so he shared this secret, ordering one on his Uber app.
Good.
It's just fun, but if you don't do it, it goes away. So I keep doing it because I want to keep doing it.
I get up in the morning and I'm going to go. You keep moving, you can keep moving.
It feels pretty good to be the best 80-year-old pole vaulter in the world.
And I do it because I can't think anything I'd rather do unless it'd be hang gliding or jumping off the mountain in Chamonix, but it's just fun. Find something you like to do well enough you want to do it every day. I happened to find pole vaulting when I was a kid, and it's still fun. And I have to watch what I eat.
Yeah. Uber fits into a healthy lifestyle because you can choose the healthy foods that you want, and you can get them quick, and it doesn't interfere with anything.
When you go to the grocery store, you get stuff that you really didn't have on your list. So with Uber, you get what you have on your list.
You open the Uber app and you go to the store you want and pick out the food you want, and you can have it delivered when you want.
You could get in a category like fresh produce and go through all the apples and bananas and everything, or frozen food. It's really easier than being in the grocery store. I usually have to ask one or two times where things are.
We ordered our lunch, and then while lunch was coming, we had a little pole vault session. 20 or 30 minutes and had a great time. It's one of those new things that's good. We had the experience this summer, our vehicle broke down and we called an Uber, first time I'd ever even thought about that. And the dude was right there, right on time, and took us to the airport. It just opens up another helpful avenue, something that you can do that hadn't been here before.
And comforting, I think. It's not like a stranger is gonna come. You know, you do have their picture there. You know when they're going to come. And it has to do with being open-minded, I think. If you want to stay young, you ought to try out different things and be current and ready to take the adventure, even if ordering food from Uber.
It's as good as it gets. It's great. I can't think of any place I'd rather be or anything I'd rather be doing.
It is always inspiring to hang out with the world champion, tech-savvy, perpetual motion machine that is Joe Johnston. You know, as we're all learning, food delivery is great and even greater when it's a benefit of your Medicare Advantage health plan. Find out if your rides and deliveries qualify at uberhealth.com. Not a bad day. We met two world champion athletes, one in her 90s, another in his 80s, plus a 70-something man who proves it's never too late to not only take up a musical instrument, but to compose. We also chatted with the former NPR correspondent turned New York Times bestselling author on midlife course corrections to navigate your way to a happy, healthy, and active old age. You know, folks, when it comes to happy and healthy aging, our lifestyle is far more important than our genes. In fact, up to 80% of how we age is determined by lifestyle, and just 20% by our genes. And the number one lifestyle determinant of how we age? It's not exercise, it's not diet, it's not socialization, and it's not sleep. As important as they all are, it's our mindset about aging. Research proves that those with a positive view of aging live on average 7.5 years longer than those with a negative view. And they don't just live longer, they live better. So start believing that more is possible and start acting like it, because that's growing bolder. I'll see you next time.
The Growing Boulder Radio Show is a production of Growing Boulder, LLC, all rights reserved. This program was recorded at Growing Boulder Studios in Orlando and is available as a weekly podcast on NPR One, iTunes, Spotify, and TuneIn. It is written and produced by Jill Middleton, Mark Middleton, and Bill Schaefer. To Technical director is Jason Morrow. Production manager is Michael Nanis. And our most important team member, you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to keep growing bolder every day.
Crimson flames tied through my ears, flowing high and mighty trapped. Countless fire and flaming rope, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I. So much older than I'm younger than that now. Half right prejudice leap for rip down all hate I scream. Lies that life is black and white spoke from my skull I dream. Romantic flanks of musketeers foundation deep. So much older than I'm younger than that now. In a soldier's stance I aim my hand at the mongrel dogs who teach. Fearing not I'd become my enemy in the instant that I preach. Sisters fled by confusion boats, mutiny from stern to bow. Ah, but I was so much older.